Al's back. Another nerd show here on Wednesday. Adam Azer, Al Melchior, Chris Towers. Al, welcome to a Wednesday show.
Thank you very much. Yeah, apparently the masses, they can't get enough nerdery.
No, they can't. We're going to have a lot of rankings disputes today. Get really statty on everybody. We're in July, Chris Towers. We're getting we're really approaching crunch time in fantasy baseball, believe it or not.
I thought you were going to say we're approaching my birthday.
When is your birthday?
July 4th.
Oh, that's right.
You know that? Come on, guys. Come on.
That's right.
It's the easiest one to remember.
Certainly the easiest one for you to remember.
The country celebrates it.
I don't have any problem remembering my birthday.
I won't either anymore, Chris, although I think I said that the first time, and I was obviously wrong about that. Now, I have a nominee for the most overowned player in fantasy baseball. He pitched last night. Any guesses? This guy is 92% owned.
92% owned, and he pitched last night.
Not particularly well, but not horribly. A lot of walks.
Ian Kennedy?
No. More walks than strikeouts this year.
Is it Colby Lewis?
No.
More walks than... There is a pitcher who pitched last night who has more walks than strikeouts.
To be fair, 8 walks, 7 strikeouts in 3 starts.
Oh, Ed,
Did I hear you say Justin Verlander?
Yeah, he's a big name, man.
Yeah, you were thinking, you know, young stud, not old... Former stud.
Out to pasture.
92% owned. There are a lot of guys I want to pick up right now. If I owned Justin Verlander, I would drop him instantly for Erasmo Ramirez or Mike Montgomery.
Yeah.
You know? Are you guys on board overall?
I'm totally on board with that. And I thought it was going to be absolutely impossible for you to come up with somebody who's more overowned than CJ Wilson, but congratulations, you did it.
Well, they're about the same amount of ownership, right? Wilson and Verlander.
I mean, CJ Wilson's actually been pretty good this season. Justin Verlander's been hurt and bad.
Yeah, Wilson has been bad. I wouldn't go so far to say he's been good either. He's been okay at best with some good starts.
All right, so I just wanted to get that out of the way.
But this is all about Justin Verlander.
Yeah, if you want to drop Justin Verlander, you have our permission to do so. I have a trivia question for you guys. And okay, so here's the trivia question. A minimum of only 20 innings, which should give you a hint. Which pitcher has the highest strikeout per nine in baseball right now? Best strikeout rate in baseball, minimum of 20 innings.
That's a low threshold.
It is, yeah.
20 innings.
Carter Capps.
Booyah!
I looked it up last night, actually. He has 38 and 20 and two-thirds, right?
Yeah, he's absolutely incredible, and he's only given up 2 earned runs all year. And if they're just going to keep letting him cheat, he's going to be really good.
Yeah, that little hop step is going to become trendy.
I did the math. I wrote about him in my closer's column last 2 weeks ago. He gains like 2 to 3 miles an hour on his fastball. Because of that little hop. Because he's releasing the ball like a foot and a half closer to the plate than he otherwise would be. So the batters have less time to react.
Oh, the only reason I bring him up is he doesn't have, he only has 1 win this year, so he doesn't rank very high in roto rankings. But he still could really help your whip and your ERA and your strikeouts to a degree if you want to look for a middle reliever. 7% owned. Carter Capps, and that's enough of that. There were 4 starting pitchers, guys, last night that I wanted to add, and they were pretty much unavailable in most of my leagues, except for Mike Montgomery, for whatever reason, but he happens to be the most owned of the group. So the 4 guys were Montgomery, who now has thrown 2 complete games in a row, complete game shutouts with 6 combined hits and 17 strikeouts. Ruby De La Rosa, maybe I like more than you guys do, I don't know, this 4 good starts in a row.
De La Rosa more than anybody, actually.
You do?
Ever.
I think I do.
Yeah, you do like Ruby De La Rosa, yeah. Andrew Heaney, 2 good ones now in his 2015 season. And Erasmo Ramirez, who's 25% owned and is just, as Al pointed out a few starts ago, getting a ton of swings and misses. Hasn't quite put it together yet with quality starts and a lot of innings. They were only letting him throw, you know, 85, 90 pitches most games. But Montgomery, De La Rosa, Heaney, and Ramirez, I actually thought last night was a great night of pitching. Those 4 really stood out to me. How would you guys rank those 4?
Erasmo, I'm going to put him up top. And then it gets pretty tough. I think I'll go Erasmo Heaney. Okay, Ruby Montgomery.
Al, you went in reverse order of ownership percentage.
That's how I roll. That's why I'm the champion of the single league format.
Yeah. Mike Montgomery is 68% owned. De La Rosa is 62% owned. Heaney's 44% owned. And Erasmo Ramirez is 25% owned. Chris, what's your order?
God, I might go Montgomery, Heaney, Ramirez, and De La Rosa, but I really do like them all for different reasons.
Do Heaney and Montgomery have staying power in their rotations?
I guess that's the one concern, is that they're both in because of injuries, so there's a chance that, you know, when Jared Weaver comes back, Andrew Heaney gets sent down, but he's pitching so well, and he's pitching up to expectations. Like, it's not like, with Montgomery or even Ramirez, you're looking at guys that aren't, you know, these guys don't have the recent pedigree that Heaney does. He's a top 50 prospect, and was as high as the top 30. So I would hope he stays in at the very least with the way he's pitching right now.
I think as long as he does, continue this, Heaney, I think he stays in because it would seem like Matt Shoemaker would be the obvious guy to go to the bullpen. He has some relief experience. If Santiago wasn't pitching well, I'd say, you know, he's had a history of being a swing man, but I think he's pitching too well for the Angels to take out. So yeah, I think it's Heaney over Shoemaker unless Heaney regresses. Montgomery, I could see him, if he continues to succeed, staying in over Elias maybe. But yeah, I think he's probably in more danger.
One good thing about Heaney, when he came up last year, I was really disappointed with how mediocre his stuff was. He was always going to be a guy who was that tagged with that crafty lefty label, but he was really like just very mediocre. He was throwing like high 90s. His average fastball right now is 92.4. So that's a big improvement on last season. I think it's like a mile and a half difference.
He was throwing high 80s or 90s?
High 80s.
Oh, okay, yeah. Now, look, I watched most of his start last night, and Heaney looked really, really good. Not only did he have a very good fastball, but his breaking pitches looked pretty good as well. Were you guys sharing the same kind of sentiment, though, as these four guys jumped out to me as, like, I could see them being really solid contributors rest of season. I want them on my team. They excite me.
No, I'm more excited about some than others. And also, it's funny because I had a group of four guys I wanted to talk about. De La Rosa wasn't one of them, but Taylor Youngman was.
Okay.
So I don't know where you guys would put Youngman in there, but I think even though he hasn't been as impressive as Montgomery so far, I think I like him better long term.
That's interesting. Now, look, we should point out it took Montgomery a little while to put these types of starts together, so maybe Youngman is getting to that point.
Maybe, and maybe Youngman will hit a part of the schedule that's been as nice as what Montgomery's had. Well, granted, okay, the Royals are actually a pretty tough matchup.
Yeah.
The fact that he got all those strikeouts against them is still mind-boggling to me. But, yeah, I have to say, I mean, I sort of discount this latest start for Montgomery because of the matchup.
Well, okay, what do you like about Youngman? I think I didn't include him in the group because I think he only has one or two quality starts so far. He's usually like a five-inning guy. What are you seeing in Taylor Youngman?
What I'm seeing in him, and in Montgomery too, both of them much better control than we've seen in the past. But whereas Montgomery, I mean, he's more neutral in terms of ground ball tendencies, Youngman has really taken a step up, both when he was in the minors and now with the Brewers this year. So that's a combination that, you know, makes him, I mean, look, I used him in the podcast league as a two-start guy this week. Frankly, out of desperation, but I think I could see myself doing so in the future, you know, just because I genuinely want to.
Al, it doesn't matter who you're starting. You picked up Mitch Moreland in the podcast league. You've won this week.
Actually, I think I'm losing.
Really?
So far. Yeah.
Ooh, if you lose with Mitch Moreland, that's going to be a bitter pill to swallow.
I know. But anyways, so I know I'm going on a long time about this. I mean, I've already talked about Erasmo Ramirez a lot. That was very frustrating that they only let him throw 84 pitches last night.
Yeah.
Because he was having a great game, pretty much going toe-to-toe with Danny Salazar. Andrew Heaney, Chris pretty much said it all, but he is getting the swings and misses. And, you know, I always like to see that. So I would prioritize those two guys over the other two or three that we've talked about.
So Al's favorite is Erasmo. Chris, your favorite was who? Montgomery?
Probably Heaney, actually.
Heaney, okay. So I just want to see, looking at the rankings here, tell me, would you drop any of these guys for your favorite on the list? Ian Kennedy.
Yes.
I think so.
How about Phil Hughes, 86% own.
Yep, he's gone.
Yep.
Chris Heston.
I'd have to say yes just because I had already dropped Heston in a couple of leagues. So
I keep stubbornly holding on to him just because there hasn't been anyone better. But I might look and see if I like any of these guys more.
Last one, Carlos Rodon.
I think that's probably where I say no.
Yeah, I still think the upside there is too high.
And do you like Matt Latos better than Heaney or Ramirez or Montgomery or De La Rosa?
I like him better than Ramirez and maybe De La Rosa.
Okay. I definitely like him better than De La Rosa. I'd say...
You just hate De La Rosa.
Yeah.
What did he do to you?
He has sucked against lefties. I take it very personally.
But he's got four good starts in a row now.
Against, including, let's point out, a very tough left-handed lineup last night.
Yeah. Yes. That hasn't been as good lately. But.
Oh, pick your nits elsewhere.
I am nitpicking. I will definitely own up to that. I still haven't answered the question because it's tough. I'm taking Erasmo over Latos. In fact, I think I made that decision in a league where I had to drop one of the two. Heaney. Yeah, I think I'm going Heaney over Latos too. Very close among the three of them though.
Well, I just wanted to talk about those guys because some nights you don't really get great pitching options. The fringy starting pitchers that we talk about, they're kind of garbage. Last night was not one of those nights. Latos is in that same ownership group as a lot of these guys. So, you know, we're talking about those four starting pitchers plus Latos. Five guys that I think you could go out there and add to your team if you need help at starting pitcher.
Five guys.
What's that? Yeah,
five guys.
Five guys is terrific. Absolutely. Went out for steak last night, by the way.
Oh,
Ruth's
so
Chris, baby. Just butter it up and put it on a 500-degree plate. You ever go there?
Where?
Ruth's Chris?
Yeah.
No, I go to Jones Chris sometimes.
Oh, well.
I make my own steak.
Ruth's Chris.
Chris is Chris.
They serve it on a plate that's like literally 500 degrees. And you, like, if you touch
it's
it.
Dangerous.
Yeah, it's
like
very
Morton.
Dangerous.
You like Morton's?
Morton's okay.
Too expensive for my blood.
They're all expensive. I had a gift card, so.
Went
out of the town. Okay. Let's get to the big news here. And then we'll talk a little bit of DFS. I don't think we're going to have time for DFS. Wednesday is a shorter show, but we'll tell you about FanDuel. Rankings. Rankings disputes. I told Chris to pick out four of Al's rankings and fight it out with Al on the air.
Yeah, we're going
to
fight.
Tomorrow you're going to do the same thing with Scott, so get ready for that.
You know, I don't like confrontation. I don't know why you're forcing
it. I do like it.
You know why.
I do like it.
Because he's Adam Azer and he loves confrontation.
I do. I love it. Bring it on.
Going.
We need more of it on this show, you big, stupid nerd who loves chick flicks.
What is that from?
What?
Gets the people going.
It's from it's Blades of Glory.
Never seen
okay.
it.
The dumb Will Ferrell ice skating movie.
That's right.
What were you going to say before you said Will Ferrell?
And Adam Sandler. Not the same thing at all.
Didn't Jay-Z sample that?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, the big news. Sonny Gray missed yesterday's start with an illness. Joey Gallo was sent to AAA. Drop or stash, Joey Gallo?
Shallow drop for sure. 12 team is where it gets tough for me.
That they started using him in the outfield makes me feel better about him, and he did exactly what I expected him to do when he came up, which was strike out a bunch and kill it when he did make contact.
Evan Gattis is four triples. Bet you didn't see that one coming.
Oh, no.
Fox Sports reports that the Angels GM, Jerry Dipoto, is no longer the GM. Some turmoil there. Now, we talked about Yasiel Puig yesterday. Is today Wednesday? Yeah. Maybe that was Monday we talked about
Didn't talk about him yesterday.
And Scott and I kind of went at it a bit about Puig. And I think he's been disappointing. There's a book out now by Molly Knight called The Best Team Money Can Buy. Talks about his reputation among his teammates, and they can't... He gets on their nerves. He seems a little entitled, it seems. The excerpt I read was interesting.
Man, that book is getting some great publicity. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to read it because I never read books, but it seems interesting. here's my thing with Puig. He doesn't homer or steal enough bases. And last year, for as good of a year as he had, he was the number 18 outfielder in rotisserie or categories leagues. And until he starts homering and or stealing bases, you know, he's a points league specialist to some degree. And I still think he hasn't reached his potential, and it's possible that his attitude is the reason why. I don't know. I wouldn't it so much. I mean,
it's possible.
Well, regardless of the reason,
yeah,
I think he's a disappointing player. Even if he has an OPS around 900 or whatever, as Scott was pointing out, fantasy production doesn't really... Forget the injuries. The fantasy production, he played 148 games last year. That's a lot of games. 12th outfielder in points leagues, 18th in roto. And no power. Three home runs this year.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. From a fantasy perspective, he's been a little disappointing.
And I get your point, too, in terms of not dismissing... you know, some of the insights that we might get about, you know, what his attitude is. The thing is that gets thrown around so often as, you know, it's kind of like the X factor.
Yes.
To try to explain something you can't explain.
Lots of really good players have had a bad attitude. I don't think Albert Bell somehow failed to live up to his potential as a hitter because of his crappy attitude. I think we're seeing with Puig, it feels a lot like Bryce Harper. His first few years where...
But does anybody question his commitment to the game?
Right,
well,
that's the thing. He loves the game.
Without getting too much into it, I think there are cultural factors involved. But they play a lot of the same way, and I think it's just... He's a young player who's shown flashes of potential, but hasn't quite lived up to what we expected. And now we're seeing with Bryce Harper... Granted, he's, 4 years younger, but we're seeing with Bryce Harper that the concerns about him failing to live up to his potential as a player were massively overblown.
Yes, but I will give another comparison. I'm going to read from the excerpt of the book, and the excerpt was apparently on Yahoo.com. I just want to give credit to everybody. So the comparison here is with Hanley Ramirez.
Yeah.
And Hanley said to Puig, I just don't want your career to go the way my career went. All my teammates hated me because of the way I played.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
On the other hand...
No, wait, just let me finish the point. Because okay. Hanley was the kind of guy who could have a season where he was one of the best players in baseball, and then the very next season, he was an extreme disappointment, whether he was healthy or not. You know what I mean? And the numbers, at times, did not match the talent with Hanley Ramirez.
From 2006 to 2010, he averaged 25 home runs, 39 stolen bases, with a .313 average. He got hurt. In 2010, his shoulder wasn't healthy. The production is what it is. I think it assumes a lot that we can't know to say that it's his reputation among his teammates or his attitude that is why he's disappointing. Maybe it's just that baseball's really hard. And hasn't run into a couple extra home runs right now.
It goes back to what Don Mattingly said, though, about him going up to the plate without a plan, you know, and not adjusting to the adjustments that the pitchers have made. So I think there is some evidence here that he has not reached his potential.
I wish every player could rock a .294 average and a 16% strikeout rate without having a plan.
He could be the MVP of the league, though. I drafted Yasiel Puig... thinking this is the year he's going to put it together one of the best players
again,
in baseball.
Last July, you would have said the exact same thing about Bryce Harper, right?
Harper's younger, though.
Harper's 2 years younger.
Said that Harper goes to the plate without a plan. I mean, people don't like Harper's personality.
I feel like we are doing a lot of retroactive... reimagining of Harper's reputation. He was getting killed last year, roundly, by everyone around baseball.
Well, for what? For being a little whiny, maybe.
For being whiny, for struggling, for failing to live up to expectations.
But why? Because he didn't have a plan. How, you just said yourself, baseball's really hard.
Yes.
How could you maximize your potential if you're not applying yourself.
I feel like it's really hard to look at what Yasiel Puig's done so far and imply that he's just doing it on raw talent.
I'll agree. I don't have the information, and it really makes me want to read this book.
That's exactly my thing, is that it just, from our perspective, if Don Mattingly says it, you have to give him the benefit of the doubt that he knows what he's talking about.
But, oh, no. I don't think you should do that.
From us, like, we're just kind of assuming we think he should be better than he has been, ergo.
I think you're taking at least what I'm saying a step too far.
Yeah, same here.
It's no different than, 3 weeks ago looking at Erasmo Ramirez's game log and saying, all of a sudden he's getting whiffs. And he's getting better results with the changeup. Maybe there's something here. I want to look into it.
Yeah.
And there's a difference between saying that and saying, oh, he's had great back-to-back starts. This is absolutely 100% legit. You see a sign of something, a suggestion of something. You think, I want to look into this. So to hear this about Yasiel Puig, I don't know anything more right now than I knew 5 minutes ago, but it makes me want to learn more about it.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
I will just say that his walk rate has improved each year in the league. His strikeout rate has gone down. That, to me, is evidence of a plan.
Okay.
I'll say that.
That's fine. We can argue about that, and you're right. We don't know enough. I'm really just basing it on what I've read recently. But I think regardless of his walk rate, doubles, triples, whatever, for most fantasy players play in categories of roto leagues. The ones who play on our side, it's mixed, but he doesn't hit enough home runs or steals to be a great outfielder.
I think that's fair.
And Al's got him 11th in Roto rest of season. And here's some of the guys ahead of him. Here are all the guys ahead of him. Trout, McCutcheon, Harper, Bautista, Gomez, Jones, Cruz, Brantley, Upton, Springer, and then Puig. Now I will ask you, are there any guys behind Puig you might consider putting ahead of him? Starling Marte? Forget Stanton, he's a different animal. Starling Marte, Ryan Braun, Corey Dickerson, Jacoby Ellsbury, who could be back Friday, Hanley Ramirez, who should be back today. Again, it's Marte, Braun, Dickerson, Ellsbury, Hanley, and let's say Jock Peterson.
Yeah, I'm not feeling like I want to rethink any of those.
Yeah, that's exactly the same thing for me. Maybe Dickerson. I'm not totally buying Marte's huge power breakout this season. I don't think the underlying things line up. I think a lot of the things that you say about Puig can be said about Hanley Ramirez. Peterson just isn't stealing the bases that we expected, and the average is low. I think he's fine there.
Okay. Well, he is 11th there, and I think that's probably a little disappointing based on, early season expectations.
Yeah, because I think I had him around 6th to start the year.
Yeah, we expected him to break out. That's 100% sure. And in fairness, he's been hurt.
Look, it could still happen. It wouldn't surprise any of us if he goes off.
Yeah, he's only played, 32 of their 78 games or whatever it is?
Yeah, well, I don't know exactly, but yeah, that sounds about right. Okay, Atlanta starting pitcher Manny Banuelos will make his Major League debut Thursday against Washington. Anyone interested in Manny Banuelos?
Just an NL only.
Okay.
I mean, it's taking the Braves a long time to get to this part of their depth chart to bring him up.
Hanley Ramirez expected back today. Alejandro de Haza could platoon with Shane Victorino when Victorino returns. I will say that without question, my least favorite part of being a fantasy podcast host is dealing with sad news and having to put a fantasy spin on it. But it has to happen. John Axford is on the family medical emergency list. He's got some personal issues going on. It's unrelated to his son, who had the rattlesnake bite in spring training. So he could be out for a little while. And in the meantime, LaTroy Hawkins got the save last night. He's pitched well since he's come off the DL, and he looks like he will be, at least that's what the article hinted at, that Hawkins will be the fill-in closer. I guess it's not set in stone, but that's your fantasy impact. Hawkins is relevant now for a bit. People asked us about who to stash for starting pitchers with all the guys coming up from the minors and Tommy John guys coming back. Derek Holland, does he interest you guys at all to stash?
I have him stashed in some pretty deep leagues, but that's probably where I'll stay with him. More than just performance, I just worry that I'd hang on to him for a while, eat up a DL spot, and he could get hurt again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Freddie Freeman may not be back before the All-Star breaks, taking a little longer. Andrew McCutchen has 2 stolen bases in his last 4 games. A good sign. Let's see some more. He has 5 this year. D. Gordon hit an inside-the-park home run.
First one ever in Marlins Park, which is shocking.
That is shocking. I didn't know that, because they've had certainly their share of inside-the-parkers.
It's a massive place.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was amazing, though.
Yeah, it was fun to watch. It was like a 3-run inside-the-parker, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was, yeah.
Pretty cool. Jed Jerko is back. Anyone interested in him? Is Corey Spangenberg on the DL? Jed Jerko.
Not at all.
Gotta show me.
And Joe Maddon brought in a magician. I just did like a magic move with my hands. I don't know why. like this revealed something. He brought in a magician to inspire the Cubs, and they got a 1-0 shutout win of the Mets. Pretty cool.
Correlation equals causation.
There you go.
Now, if he could just make that committee disappear and make a full-time closer appear.
Yeah, pull a closer out of his hat.
Yeah, so while we're on that subject, Jason Mott got the save yesterday. Strope pitched the 8th, and Rondon pitched the 9th, or the 7th. So either Anthony Rendon pitched the 9th or Hector Rondon pitched the 7th. You guys take your pick. But yeah, Mott got the save. What's your read on that?
It's Mott, I think. I feel like that's the way it's going, but he went more than a week between save opportunities. It feels like he's been used how you would use a closer more often than anybody else.
Isn't he just alternating, taking turns? It seems like it's 1-2-3, 1-2-3.
It just felt like every time I looked, it was Mott working the 9th in a tie game or the 10th in a game where they had the lead. So it's frustrating.
They've been losing lately.
I write my closer column every week, and I've written about them 4 weeks in a row now, and I'm kind of done with it.
I'd say the one guy I wouldn't want is Strope. He seems like the least appealing.
Even though he might be the best of the three.
Well, he's walking guys a lot lately.
He's got the opportunity.
They're all pretty solid. I mean,
yeah. But in terms of I think he has the most strikeout potential out of the three.
Okay, well, it sucks. Thank you, Joe Maddon, for doing this again. So you guys have been playing fantasy baseball the same way for so long, and we love it, and we're certainly glad you're playing and listening to the podcast. But give FanDuel a try, because FanDuel is changing the way people play fantasy sports. One day fantasy baseball, and obviously at FanDuel, it's not just fantasy baseball. They have basketball, they have football, they have hockey. They have many, many things that you can try. Give it a shot. Entry fees start at just $1. No season-long commitment, no sign-up fees. You can play any day you want. If you're not feeling it, play the next day. Play the day after that, whatever, or play every single day. We play all the time, and we have a live video show at 6 p.m. Eastern to help you out. Daily Fantasy Live, 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Eastern to help you set your FanDuel lineup. Use the offer code CBSPOD. Sign up now. And for every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. Last night was, I think, the best night I've ever had, by the way. I had almost 60 FanDuel points. Things worked out well. Made
who
up
was
for that
your DFS MVP? Because that's you obviously had a great lineup.
Mitch Moreland.
Yeah, that helps.
$2,600. Had him in there. I had Shin-Soo Chu in there. Chris Sale. Rougned Odor was okay. Kyle Seager was a dud, but other than that, David Ortiz I had in there. He's been homering a lot lately.
Yep.
Not doing too much else, but been homering.
It's worth playing against righties.
You guys ready for an impromptu game and name that player?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm never really ready for it, but.
Let's do it.
I like doing it, yeah.
I am batting .305 with a .370 on base percentage and a .550 slugging percentage. I just want to say, by the way, I feel like you're going to get this before I
run those numbers by me again.
No problem. And don't look it up.
All right. I'm not. Whoa.
Stop Googling slash lines.
305, 370 on base, 550 slugging.
Huh.
In June, I batted .239 with a .323 on base and a .307 slugging.
Was hot, gone cold.
In 2014, I batted .214 from the beginning of June to the end of August.
Nelson Cruz?
Damn you, Chris Towers!
Yeah.
How'd you do that?
I know he hasn't been very good lately.
Yeah, the second part of that was I batted .214 from the beginning of June to the end of August, so 3 months, and still finished as the number 6 outfielder in fantasy.
Yep.
And my fake cousin Tom was a sports agent only after serving as a bartender on a beach in Jamaica and a fighter pilot. So Nelson Cruz is doing what he does best, and the batting average is starting to regress right now, but only one home run in June, too. What do you think about him rest of the season?
I just think he's going to be Nelson Cruz. You know, he's not going to hit 300. He is going to hit a bunch of homers. Probably finish in the 35 to 40 range.
Okay. Yeah. 35, 40 home runs, not outfielders.
I'm sorry, yeah, not like fantasy ranking. Yeah.
All right, yeah, so you take Cruz over Puig rest of season?
No, if I've got it ranked that way, that needs to be fixed.
You do.
All right.
How about you, Chrissy?
I'd still take Puig.
Stat of the day, Chris Sale tied a major league record, 8 straight games with 10 strikeouts or more.
He is currently the 9th pitcher to qualify for an ERA title while striking out more than 12 batters per 9 innings.
Sale or Kershaw?
He's still got to go Kershaw. He's playing for a better team. He'll get more wins. The ERA is better. I think you go with him.
The ERA is only better, though, right now because Sale had the rough start to the season. But in his last 10 starts, Sale has a 1.78 ERA.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, he is.
I'm not. There's no question about that.
All right, rank Sale, Kershaw, Scherzer.
I'm pretty sure I've got him Kershaw, Sale, Scherzer. But yeah. Really, it's to me, it's 1A, 1B, 1C.
Yeah, can we just on the same level?
Yeah,
just,
I guess
on a
so.
Plane?
Okay. Tuesday standouts, we got to talk about Mitch Moreland.
Yeah.
2 more home runs, 4 in his last 2 games, 6 in his last 6 games, 60% owned. And we talked a lot about him yesterday, so I don't know that we need to repeat much, but still, I mean, come on, it's getting ridiculous here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see him, you know, having like a crazy breakout that's starting right now where, you know, he's going to become a 40 home run guy. But, you know, he had long been cited, and I don't remember exactly where I was reading or hearing this, but that, you know, he had this great power potential and we just never really saw it. So I think he could be taking a step up, but, you know, he'll obviously cool off.
Well, here's what we're going to do the rest of this show. There are two particular, with that Puig discussion kind of threw things off a bit.
Yeah.
But that's fine because I enjoyed it because, you know, I like confrontation. We got to have the rankings dispute. Chris is going to call out Al on 4 rankings in a very friendly way. And there were a few things, 4 or 5 things that I found interesting going through some research last night and this morning that I want to get to. And then if we have time, we'll talk about Lance Lynn, Danny Salazar, some other stuff, some deep league guys. And let's start out. Just, are there any more standouts that we need to get to from Tuesday?
I think we can move ahead.
I just want to talk about Jordan Zimmermann, though, if you would.
I want to shout out Jackie Bradley Jr. hit a home run. I'm all in on this former top prospects that busted and are getting a chance thing.
No way. Not him.
I'm doing it.
Not him. How many chances are you going to give Jackie Bradley? First of all, he's not even going to play.
I'm doing it.
You're kidding, right?
Just as someone that I'm keeping an eye on.
Has he been good in the minors this year?
Yes.
He's been good in the minors every year. He's a terrible major leaguer.
I know. He might be a quad A player, but I'm just keeping an eye on him. I'm not saying go add him.
Hanley Ramirez is coming back today.
I'm keeping an eye on him.
Shane Victorino is coming back very soon. You can keep an eye on him in
Triple A. Hurt again at some point, inevitably. Time is a flat circle. I'm just keeping an eye on him.
All right, you do that. That's what we do at CBS. We keep an eye on baseball. Jordan Zimmermann. I think I want to sell him now, but then I think to myself, he's been so good for like 4 straight years. Maybe he's going to put it together and be that amazing pitcher with a great ERA and whip and get a ton of wins, even if the strikeouts aren't there. But he's faced the Braves twice in his past 2 starts without Freddie Freeman. He has completely dominated them. I think like 16 scoreless innings. And his ERA has gone down from 3.75 to 3.16 in those 2 starts against the hapless Braves. What would you do with Jordan Zimmermann?
I wouldn't sell him. I mean, hey, if you really could sell him for, you know, I don't know, top 15 starter value, yeah, I'd do that. I don't feel confident I could get it. But, yeah, mostly I would just look to hold him because I didn't really think he was going to keep being a 3.75 ERA pitcher. And, yeah, maybe not as good as the Braves matchup makes him look. But, yeah, I'll go with that longer track record.
Chris, ready for a rankings dispute?
Yeah.
Before you get into yours, I did see a cool email from Jin in Anaheim, and he says Paul Goldschmidt should be the number one player in fantasy. He's on pace for 40 home runs and 30 steals with a very high batting average. Move him ahead of Mike Trout, and Al, you need to move him ahead of Miguel Cabrera at first base.
That's a tough one. I do struggle with that. And basically, if Miguel Cabrera were having a really disappointing year, I would have no problem with doing that. But basically, I go back and I look at my projections. I see some things that I'm not confident that Goldschmidt's going to sustain. And so I just don't see enough reason to change it. But I mean, they were neck and neck in my preseason rankings, and they're still neck and neck.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
He's giving you everything Cabrera is.
No,
he's on a 30 stolen base pace.
Right. Well, and that's part of the thing. I had him projected for 12 this season. Of course, he's already exceeded that, but we're about halfway now.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's very plausible he maybe only gets 6 the rest of the way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really see him being a 30 stolen base guy. And even with the steals advantage over Cabrera, I gave Cabrera a very slight lead at both Roto and head-to-head value in my preseason projections. So I'm not buying that. I'm not buying the run production because he's hitting over 400 with runners in scoring position. And he's had a huge strikeout dip, which, again, I'm not completely confident he's going to sustain.
This is Goldschmidt
you're talking
about. The
longer he does these things, the more confidence I'm going to have. So maybe 2 weeks from now, I make that swap. Right now, they're very, very close. But I just want to swap it just because, you know, his numbers have been better.
Yeah.
I think there are some things that are likely to regress.
I mean, he's basically been 2013 version of himself with a better BABIP. And last year, he had the hand injury, which kind of screwed everything. It was a hand injury, right? Broken hand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it kind of screwed everything up. And he was still awesome.
To put it in perspective, Paul Goldschmidt is, let's see, 53 plus 22, 75 fantasy points better than Miguel Cabrera. That is ridiculous.
And he's not even number one overall, right?
Who, Goldschmidt?
Yeah.
It might be Harper.
Yeah, I think Harper's still number one.
Well, can you make the case for Goldschmidt ahead of Trout?
I mean, right now, him and Harper have both been better than Trout this season, right?
Goldschmidt is number one, by the way. Actually,
okay.
He's way ahead of Harper. He's,
really?
39
354.
Fantasy points better than Harper. And I'll look in Roto as well. Trout is the number six hitter. It goes Goldschmidt, Harper, Frazier, Rizzo, Arenado, and Trout.
I could see doing that in the fairly near future. But it's really more about me being a little disappointed with Trout.
Trout, at least, he got caught stealing last night on a great throw by McCann. He stole a base the night before, so hopefully those are going to pick up.
Yeah.
I think when you consider the fact that Mitch Moreland is 60% owned, it gives you an idea of how deep first base is.
Yeah.
And outfield, it's not like outfield isn't deep. I mean, you can always find outfielders, but there's a pretty big drop-off.
It's really not that deep.
I mean, it's deep in the sense that, like, Christian Yelich is 80% owned, and you could pick him up. But the guys that are great, there aren't that many of them. So I still think outfield is much shallower than first base, and you got to go outfield over first base. That's my take on it. By the way, Goldschmidt is the number one hitter in Roto. Let's see. Miguel Cabrera doesn't appear to be in the top 10. Harper, Frazier, Stanton, Arenado, Trout. Cabrera is right around 10. Brett Gardner is better than Miguel Cabrera this year. Who saw that coming? Okay. Sorry. Now let's go to the rankings that Chris wanted to dispute with Al.
All right.
Go for it, Chris.
All right. You gotta explain this one to me. Talk me into this Garrett Richards thing. You still have him number 12 in both Roto and head to head. You have him ahead of Chris Archer. Now, granted, Chris Archer has taken a huge step forward this season.
Mm-hmm.
So there's reason for skepticism to be sure. 2.31 ERA, 2.46 FIP. On the other hand, it's not like Garrett Richards has this long track record that we can point to. He only had 168 and two-thirds innings last season where he was really good, 2.61 ERA. Archer's been better last season, and I think you could say Archer last season was better than Richards has been this season.
Yeah.
So aggregate.
Yeah, Al, you're stupid.
Yeah. I just...
Way to pile on, Al.
I get the Richards... I get the reason for optimism. He gets a lot of ground balls. He induces weak contact consistently. But I can't see him as a number one starting pitcher in a top, in a 12 team league, especially over Chris Archer. If you had Garrett Richards and I called you up and said, "Hey, Al, it's your pal Chris here. I will give you Chris Archer for Garrett Richards." There's no way you would say no to that. There's no way you would say no to that.
I think I would.
There's no way. That's
I you know, they're close, they're similar, but for you to be so emphatic that Archer is better than Richards. Now the overall numbers don't look great for Richards because he's had some clunkers. But, you know, if you look at what he's done most consistently, it's exactly what you described. It's inducing really weak contact, you know, getting swings and misses at a really high rate. Really good control. So, you know, those are all the things that you want to see. And yes, he has done it for a little longer than Archer has.
Well, no, I don't think he had. I mean,
oh, come on. Last season, he was freaking dominant.
It was okay, but right now, Archer's at 109 innings. Richards was at 168 and two-thirds. So it's what? 59 innings.
All right, but you keep on subtracting this year.
Well, no, yeah, but
most of this year.
No, but what I'm saying is that between last year and this year, you've got about 255 innings for Richards of overall pretty good, sub-3 ERA.
You're selling him short.
No, but I'm saying the aggregate between the two seasons is right around a sub-3 ERA, like 2.9. With Archer, we've got more than 300 innings now over the last two seasons of a well below 3 ERA. If you put the two seasons together, Archer's the better pitcher between them. And I think the upside Archer's shown this season is higher than what Richards showed last
season. All right, well, I will admit that surprises me, that if you compare the two seasons together, you know, right next to each other, that would even be close. Because my perception of last season for Archer was that he was really inconsistent.
Yeah, well, you're right.
The overall numbers were not that good.
It was like, but he turned it on late.
3.33 ERA.
All right, well, don't be an ERA-niac because...
No, I know, but a 3.39 whip, he's actually been someone who, over the last two seasons, his FIP and ERA have been pretty much identical. So there's not that... he was inconsistent, but the highs were really high, the lows were low, but the overall track record for him now is a 3.36 FIP in his major league career. He's been very good.
Well, he has.
Next. Next up, Evan Gattis.
Evan Gattis, number 4 catcher in head-to-head. He's number 5 in head-to-head right now.
Wait, Chris, hold on 1 second. I just want to clarify for everyone. When Chris says head-to-head, he means points, not head-to-head
points
categories. Things,
yeah.
Points.
He's number 5 in points. I think... We trust Buster Posey and Stephen Vogt to be better. I think you have them both higher than him. Or no, you don't.
I don't have Vogt higher.
Okay, you don't have Vogt higher. You do have Salvador Perez higher than him. He's lower. And I think it's fair to say that Jonathan LaCroix will probably be better than Gattis. So what's the argument for Gattis at number 5?
I'm not really enthused about putting him there.
Yeah.
But it's a question of trustworthiness. Trustworthiness is what I almost just said. And upside. And, I'm taking a look at preseason projections because that really incorporates more of the upside that we haven't seen this year. I am with a 257, 296, 507 slash. Basically I expected a little more power and a little bit more batting average.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, I know that the strikeout to walk thing makes them less valuable in a points league, but still, when you compare the power upside against who's behind him in the standings, I don't think there's anybody to shove ahead of him.
Yeah, I'm not saying he needs to fall too far, but I would put Vogt ahead of him at this point.
If Vogt were healthy, I was pretty much looking to do that, and with him not being 100% healthy, I wasn't quite ready to make that move.
I'm kind of worried about Vogt, by the way. He just seems to get so banged up all the time.
Yeah.
It's scaring me a little bit.
The good news, I guess, would be the emergence of Fegley as a reasonable catcher option that they can throw back there more often, take the bumps and bruises off of Vogt a little more, hopefully.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, you know, that is a good point, and that helps Vogt a little bit. I just worry that even with continued play at a less demanded position, that the production is going to fall off. Both because of him not being healthy and because, I mean, what he's done up to this point is so unprecedented for him. I could see Gattis going off on this major power splurge, and Vogt just being kind of so-so in the second half.
Okay, that's fair.
Chris, are you a Power Man 5000 fan?
Not. I remember they were in the soundtrack for Tony Hawk 2. That's about the extent of my knowledge of the Power Man.
Will they sing that song, When Worlds Collide?
Yeah, that's the song from the Tony Hawk soundtrack.
While you this might only be funny to me, but while you guys were arguing about Garrett Richards, in my head I was like, this is what it's like when nerds collide! All right, we have two more here, and then we're going to save the interesting things I found while researching until tomorrow. And also, Chris gets to argue with Scott about rankings, which should be fun. We'll have a longer show tomorrow.
Scott likes conflict better than I think either of us does, so.
Not more than I do, though.
No.
And, I'm totally with you on this, Chris. I brought this up to Scott now last week, and they poo-pooed it. But Chris likes DeGrom better than Harvey.
Look, early in the season, I was, after I think his first five starts, I was a little skeptical of Jacob DeGrom. His strikeout rate was way down. He didn't. And that was the biggest thing for me. And I guess that makes sense for why I would be not at quite as high on him, is that the strikeout rate has come out of nowhere. It really, like, he never struck out this many batters in the minors. And it's pretty unprecedented to go from a 7 strikeouts per 9 guy, you know, an 18-19% strikeout rate guy to a 25. But we're at 240 innings and counting. Over two different seasons of him being a near elite strikeout pitcher with very good control. And, you know, this season he's been a better strikeout guy than Harvey. More ground balls, only slightly more, but he's controlled the power game a little more. I think DeGrom's right now better than Harvey.
I think he's closed the gap. He certainly has been better.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not ready to make that leap yet with DeGrom, and I think that there could be a change of direction on both sides. I'm really at a loss to explain why Harvey hasn't been better,
mm-hmm.
but I still, to me, he's a guy who should be in the top 10.
You know what's crazy?
What's that?
Harvey has a higher left on base percentage, a higher strand rate than DeGrom.
Yeah,
and
that
still,
is crazy.
A significantly worse ERA.
So they'll both, you know, regress there. But where I do see regression from DeGrom, or at least there's a possibility of it, is with the home run rate, which is very low. And you talked about him controlling the power game. In breaking down the distribution of the fly ball, I'm getting super nerdy now,
mm-hmm.
the fly ball distance, a very low proportion of them have gone over 300 feet. I don't know if that's skill or not. Because he does allow a lot of fly, you know, relatively large proportion of fly balls.
Well, and he's at 34%, 31% last season. Harvey, in his three partial seasons, has never been as low as DeGrom was last season in fly ball percentage. And two out of his three seasons have been higher than DeGrom this year.
That's none. That's all fair, and I expect it to be very close. But I could see Harvey rest of way being, you know, quite a bit better than a strikeout per inning guy. And I don't see DeGrom for his strikeout rate. I feel like this is the upside,
mm-hmm.
and this is as good as it is, and it may stay this good. But I just think Harvey's going to be one of those, or at least has a good chance of being one of those super dominant, you know, closer to Scherzer than DeGrom. Kind of pitchers.
Okay.
Did you know that the atomic weight of carbon is 12.0107?
That's not how the atomic weight works at all.
Sorry, we got so nerdy with those stats there. I just thought I'd contribute. Thank you, Google, for that.
All right, last one.
Last one, and we got to wrap up the show, so let's make this one a little quicker.
I have Todd Frazier behind Jose Abreu and Edwin Encarnacion as a nitpick. I could give you Edwin Encarnacion because of the track record. Why is Jose Abreu still ahead of Todd Frazier?
It's an upside thing because he does have, I think, he showed in the first half last year, power potential that could not blow away both of those guys, certainly, you know, be superior.
Abreu, you mean?
Abreu, yes.
Yeah, but it's a very limited track record. He did, tailed off after the All-Star break last year a little bit, right?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, that's the knock against Frazier, right? He tailed off in a big way after the All-Star break. I think he was a sub-800 OPS guy.
I can really cut to the chase on this because you can make an argument for any of the three to be the best. Of the three, to me, it's very clear Frazier's got the lowest floor.
I think that's what it comes down to. Yeah.
Okay, but if that floor is 29-20 and a 273 average,
but the floor rest of season is what he did last year after the All-Star break, I think.
Sure.
Because these are rest of season rankings.
But I think he's I think that undersells him a little bit. I think he's definitely improved as well.
Yeah. Probably.
And I'll agree with that.
And he's hitting a lot more fly balls this season, so the home run jump isn't as crazy as it seems. That might not be sustainable. Fly ball percentage is something that fluctuates a lot.
Okay, I'm going to say a few more things and then we're going to go. Do you have any interest in Kyle Hendricks or Ivan Nova? They're about 50% owned.
More in Hendricks than Nova.
Agreed, and for a two-start week, that is very under-owned for Hendricks.
I think you guys should be loving Ivan Nova a little bit more than that. FYI.
I like him, but we're just friends.
All right, well. I like him. And in deep league, Cesar Hernandez stole two more bases. He's 17% owned, and Nick Ahmed is 4% owned. He has homered in two straight games. Like Ahmed and NL only?
Like I like him even a little more than that.
Okay.
He's batted some leadoff of late. I think not last night, but had been batting leadoff. And yeah, the power production's really inching up for him.
Tomorrow we can explore the catcher position, which has been pretty interesting, and look at what Randall Grichuk, who had three hits yesterday with Chris Sale on the mound. I don't know how many came against Chris Sale, but he doubled and homered off of him, so at least two.
He's pretty good against lefties, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he's a top 25 outfielder since coming back up on May 16th, so we'll talk more about him. Jose Bautista and Chris and Scott will fight it out, and it'll be super fun. Thank you all for listening. Email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Don't forget we have a mailbag show coming up that's going to be recorded Thursday afternoon and played for you on Friday morning, July 3rd, when we are off. Chris and Al, thank you guys. Just kiss and make up.
No hard feelings, Al.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, nothing
personal.
We're good.
Okay. For Chris Towers and Al Melchior, I'm Adam Azer. We'll talk to you on Thursday.